All right, Alexander, let's talk about the state of things in the UK. The rumor is that the Conservatives are trying to figure out a way to be rid of Rishi Sunak. True or not true? The polling numbers look abysmal for the Tories.
It is true. And I mean, it's disturbing also that it's now reached the American media. I mean, Bloomberg is carrying this story, but it's absolutely, I'm sure it is true. There has never been a point in the history of the British Conservative Party when it is polling so badly. The latest opinion polls put it around 20%. Keir Starmer's party, by the way, is about 43%. So that's a 23% gap. There are real fears that when the election comes, which will probably be towards the end of this year, or just conceivably at the start of next year, we will see a conservative implosion, that the conservatives will have fewer than 100 seats coming out of the election, which is unprecedented for this party. It has never happened at any point in British history since the Conservative Party emerged, and the Conservative Party has a continuous history going back to the late 17th century. So that gives you a sense of how critical and bad the situation is. And one also gets the sense from Sunak himself, though he is still in name Prime Minister, he is no longer exercising the functions of Prime Minister to any real effect. He gives orders, he makes decisions, and those orders are, and decisions that he makes are just ignored, and that everything else just carries on, slowly falling apart around him. What has crystallized this feeling that Sunak is leading the Conservatives to total collapse is the last budget that the government published last week. That was expected to be the budget that was going to transform the mood in Britain. It was expected that it would announce big tax cuts, which the Conservatives were hoping for, which they thought would increase the government's popularity. The budget came. It did announce some tax cuts. The British electorate were completely unimpressed, and the government's popularity continued to fall. And on top of all of that, the Conservative Party has got into a major mess over the certain comments that the deputy chairman of the Conservative Party, a man called Lee Anderson, made, which some people thought made too many criticisms of Muslim people. I have to be very careful what I say here. Anyway, he was sacked from his position. He's now defected to Change UK. And that also has accelerated the sense of decay within the party and has apparently angered a lot of working class voters in some of the Red Wall former Labour seats who had backed the Conservatives in 2019, because they trusted the Conservatives to deliver Brexit. So the whole thing looks terrible. And by the way, the economic situation in Britain looks very bad. Economy now probably in recession after a decade and a half of stagnation. Productivity is falling and has been falling now for a long time. Government debt has been rising, and the tax burden in Britain is the highest it's been since 1948. In other words, since the period directly after the Second World War, when the British had to pay back all the costs that they'd incurred during the Second World War. So, terrible situation and a collapsing government.
Yeah, I think they kept Sunak in there too long. He had that meltdown last week over Galloway. That looked really bad. But I mean, I think they kept the guy in in office just way too long. I mean, it was obvious that he wasn't cut for the job of prime minister. Not that Boris Johnson or Truss or anyone like that was any better, but the conservatives, they should have gotten rid of him a long time ago. Maybe they didn't have anybody though to replace him. I don't know.
Well, they do, and the talk is bringing Boris Johnson back. It sounds astonishing, but that's the idea. Now, bear in mind there are reasons why they haven't moved against Sunak, and one is that, of course, Sunak is the third prime minister that they'd had over the course of this parliament. Firstly, we had Johnson, then we had Liz Truss for all of a few weeks, then we have Sunak. Getting rid of Sunak and bringing back Johnson would look, I mean, it would look ridiculous. But of course, some people are saying within the Conservative Party, ridiculous as it might look, you're still bringing back into Downing Street a successful electoral campaigner, somebody with a big personality. It can't be worse than clinging on to Sunak. I'm going to push back, however. I agree with you that in party political terms, the Sunak premiership has been a complete disaster. For the Conservative Party, as a governing party, it has been a disaster. Arguably, for Britain, it has been a disaster. But if we go back to the days after Liz Truss's fall, if you remember, at the time, I said that this was all the result of a plot. I said that Liz Truss was shunted aside, that the establishment bringing their own people back in, that Sunak himself was absolutely, you know, part of the globalist European network. And he was brought in basically to shift Britain back in that direction. From the perspective of the people who did all of this, assuming, of course, that my analysis is correct, which I've no doubt it is, by the way, well, they've got from Sunak what they wanted. I mean, their allegiance is not specifically to the Conservative Party. What they want and have always wanted is to see this dangerous Brexit nationalist current in Britain defeated and Britain brought back into the globalist mainstream, if you wish. Sunak was an obvious person to do that. And from their point of view, and again, I made this point at the time, the person they always really wanted was not Sunak, it was Keir Starmer, and they're going to get him. Because as the Conservatives implode, Starmer, Labour, not especially popular amongst people in Britain. Every single survey says this. But by default, they're going to win, and they're going to win big. So we're going to have Keir Starmer, unlikable to many people in Britain, but Prime Minister of a Labour government with a huge majority, able to take Britain even further in a globalist direction, able to pull it back into the EU system. There's already articles now starting to appear in the Financial Times, which are essentially saying that. And you can argue that they have got exactly what they intended, and that for them, Sunak has actually delivered. You get rid of the Conservatives, well, what does it matter, at least in the short to medium term?
A win for the globalists.
Absolutely. And, you know,
a big win for the globalists. Now that I'm thinking about everything. It seems like they almost played everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think they have. And by the way, I mean, this is only a, you know, minor aspect of this. But the way in which Parliament is now being managed should in itself alert people to what is going on. Now, you remember during the Brexit war, we had this extraordinary speaker, John Bercow, who was clearly a fervid Remainer. He was bending procedure all the time to make as much trouble for Johnson's government, which is trying to get Brexit done, as much trouble for them as possible, and was allowing all kinds of weird and wonderful motions to be brought by Remainer MPs, trying to disrupt the government's program. Well, Bercow had to stand down, and the man who took over from him was a man called Lindsay Hoyle. And a lot of people expected that Lindsay Hoyle would, you know, start to right the ship, that he would not be an openly political speaker as Bercow had been. But over the last 2 weeks or so, things have changed. Now, there've been two events which have been really very telling. The first one was over a vote about a ceasefire in Gaza. And this happened on a day when, by convention, the party that is allowed to propose the motions to the House of Commons is one of the opposition parties, in this case, the Scottish Nationalist Party. And they proposed a motion that called for an immediate and complete ceasefire in Gaza. Starmer didn't want that motion to go forward because he knows that many of his MPs would support it and it's embarrassing for him, but he doesn't want to break with the British establishment over Middle East policy. He's very close to that of the government. So he spoke with the Speaker, and the Speaker, instead of proposing the Scottish Nationalist Party's amendment, instead proposed a much watered-down Labour amendment. And the Scottish, the SNP amendment, wasn't debated at all. Now, that is unprecedented. And the clerks of the House of Commons were furious about this. This is the bureaucracy there. And the Speaker actually was forced to apologise. But the point is, there was a debate on the Labour amendment, not the SNP one. There was no rebellion against Starmer, therefore, because all the Labour MPs supported their own party's amendment. And Starmer got what he wanted and, you know, escaped trouble. Now, that was already, you know, that was a big event in parliamentary terms. It sounds complicated, but it shows that the Speaker is now assisting Starmer. He did that again last week. We had another debate last week. Earlier this week. This was about certain comments made by a donor, financial donor, of the Conservative Party. He made some very critical comments against a black London MP called Diane Abbott. Now, Diane Abbott is a close friend of Jeremy Corbyn. Starmer has basically booted her out of the Parliamentary Labour Party. He's aiming to prevent her from standing again as a Labour candidate in the forthcoming election. But anyway, there was an outcry because this donor said these things about Diane Abbott. There was a debate in the House of Commons to criticise this donor. It was proposed by the Labour Party. And Diane Abbott was there. She stood up 37 times, apparently, asking for permission to speak in this debate, which is about abusive comments supposedly made about herself. And the Speaker didn't see her. He ignored her. He didn't want to call her because, again, Starmer wouldn't have wanted it. He wouldn't have wanted this MP to garner sympathy in a debate like this at a time when Starmer himself is trying to force her out of the Labour Party as he works to purge the party of all of Corbyn's supporters. Now, these are minor things. I don't want to overstate the importance of these events in Parliament. Most people are not interested in them. But again, what they show is that every part of the political machinery is now being used to help Starmer not just become prime minister, but to put him in an impregnable position.
Yeah, Starmer is the guy. He's the guy that they want, that they've been pushing for.
Yes.
They're going to get him too.
Oh,
it's
going
to be a disaster, my prediction.
Yeah, absolutely. There are many people who say that. Interestingly enough, both on the right and on the left. It's not actually unprecedented in Britain, but there are people on the, you know, the authentic right and the authentic left who are agreeing about an awful lot about what's wrong about Britain today. And I think this is something I would try to explain to people about Britain, which is that historically in Britain, Britain is unusual because people were very much on the right and people who were very much on the left at a personal level in politics often used to get on quite well together. Within the system that we have today, that's become more difficult. But you can start to see ultimately that there is now, both on the right, I mean, on the real right, the actual genuine right, not the Sunak right, which isn't a right, and on the genuine left, not the Starmer left, which isn't the genuine left, but the real left, there are people who are now beginning to emerge and they're starting to make the same criticisms.
Yeah. All right. We will leave it there. TheDuran.locals.com. We are on Rumble, Odyssey, BitChute, Telegram, Rockfin, and Twitter X. And go to the Duran shop. 15% off all t-shirts. Take care.